I was remembering around this time last year, a group of us from Parkdale and from St. John's United Church in Oakville were preparing to go to Turkey. The land of Turkey, formerly Asia Minor, where much of the New Testament unfolds. Much of the journeys of Paul that we followed and tracked. The churches mentioned in Revelation, we visited six of the seven sites that are mentioned there. And we traveled around and we remarked as we stopped from time to time to worship on the incredible, incredible testimony and energy and commitment of those early Christians. Paul in particular transformed, called to share and witness to this new message of Jesus Christ, raised in love and power, traveling what amounts to, we're told, almost 27,000 kilometers. Now, he didn't have the beautiful air-conditioned coach that we did. And we only did 5,000 kilometers. And we had ice cream on the way. But there's something about actually being there that reminded us that this business that we are about today, as we reflect on, is real. It is so real. We saw it palpably in the lives and the testimony and the evidence, as it were, of those who grasp the story, of those who experienced the risen Christ, those who believed this tale. This was not a normal, natural occurrence. Springtime is upon us, and some of us are really happy that it came early, not too serious a winter. Now, we're told that it may be problematic for those who suffer from allergies, that it's a little bit too soon and so forth. So there's good and bad in this. But we see the flowers coming. The azaleas are beginning, and we see the pushing up of the shoots as we rake away all of that dross, as it were, that accumulated on our lawn or wherever. And we see the signs naturally of spring. And sometimes, because Easter happens in the springtime, we are tempted to think that this is just one of those natural moments of reversal, of coming to life again. But nothing could be further from the truth. There's nothing natural about people getting up from the dead. There's nothing natural about contending with the power of death in the way that God has chosen to in the life of Jesus the Christ. And when we look at our text from Luke today, we're giving some hints of what we may draw from this into ourselves and to see our own responses as mirrored in those and even invited to go beyond them. There's something, and I've been preaching on resurrection texts for a long time, and even before preaching, hearing about them and reading them. And something struck me a different way this time as I reflected and prepared this particular message. It starts in the chapter before. There's a very telling phrase, and I guess my mind was attuned to this because we have just finished over the past few months studying in our Bible study the book of Genesis. And something leapt out to me. In the text before, we're told of the women of Galilee. Too often in Christian tradition, it has been underrepresented or not represented at all that Jesus had women disciples. Women disciples followed him all over. We hear of the men and the 12, that inner circle, but Jesus had a throng of women disciples. There were women who indeed financed his itinerant ministry from their own means. And we're told twice in the chapter before, the women of Galilee who followed him. They're the ones that this story turns on. And in the chapter before, we read that they had come. It was a day of preparation before the Sabbath. And the women who had come with him from Galilee followed and saw the tomb and how the body was laid. So they wanted to see where they put Jesus. But they went away because Sabbath was upon them. And it says, and then they returned and prepared spices and ointments. They finished all of that. And then on the Sabbath, they rested according to the commandment. That little phrase is not just a throwaway. For me, it had such huge significance that kindled a new awareness of what happened to the women. This was the commandment to recognize and observe Sabbath. And the word that is used there that they rested, manuha, is a very potent and pregnant and powerful word in Hebrew. Goes back to the first two chapters of Genesis. When God in creating the earth, 7 days, that very liturgical piece of attribution to God's power and creativity. It says, God rested, manuha, and invited others and all who would observe indeed this rhythm of creation and rest to do the same. That Sabbath opportunity and that rest, as Abraham Herschel reminds us, was a time of serenity and peace, where humans are invited to recognize that the generativity and the power of God in creation can go on without us, thank you very much. That we are to cease from working, cease from affecting, as it were, the creation, and to allow ourselves the deep pleasure of contentment and looking back and observing and languishing in the beauty and the sufficiency of God's creation. It is to recognize the activity of God. And so when it says that they observed the Sabbath as was commanded and that they rested, they are positioning themselves spiritually to be able to recognize some things that God is doing that they may not have noticed before. I think this is absolutely key because something huge is about to fall upon them. And I think that they were positioned. In other words, you are here. All of us are here for a variety of reasons. But that we are here and that we are singing and hearing, no matter how resistant or open this person may be or that person may be, there's something happening in this space, in this time, that positions us perhaps to hear something new. Because we have come together as we have been commanded to rest and to observe this holy moment. And then the text begins. But on the first day of the week at early dawn, they went. The women went. Something has changed. Theologian Theodore Wardlaw has noticed something about this particular rendition of the resurrection different than the others. And that is Luke's use of that, what he calls a defiant conjunction called but. Here it appears in these 12 verses 8 times. And there's something about that that tells us you haven't heard all the story. He says it's kind of like grabbing us by the lapels and says, God's not finished yet, but there's more. But on the first day of the week at early dawn, they went to the tomb taking the spices they had prepared, and they found the stone rolled away. People who are dead stay dead. They are given an interesting comment by the ones that they meet there. Why do you look for the living among the dead? Remember what he said to you. Remember his words. They, like we today, all they receive is the message. They are not given the ability to see this Jesus, to have a camcorder to videotape the resurrection. All they are given is the testimony by the messengers of the word. Remember what he said to you. This is what we do and rehearse every week, week after week. We remember the words of Jesus. We remember that resurrection good news. And it is that memory that challenged them and invited them and even seduced them to feel and experience what new was taking place. They remembered not only his words that he must die and suffer, but they began to remember as they traveled with him his words in teaching and in parables. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love your enemies. They remember his words when that woman was caught in adultery and others with venomous intent, ready to stone her. They remember his words. You who have no sin, cast the first stone. They remember the words to the woman. who suffered for years and years with hemorrhage. They remembered that for the first time ever recorded, that Jesus turns and not only recognizes that her faith has made her well, but calls her something that has never been done before, calls her a daughter of Abraham. They remember that Jesus said, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." They remember the words, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for He has anointed me to preach the good news to the poor, bind up the brokenhearted, set at liberty those who are oppressed." They remember the words. And all of a sudden, it begins to make sense, to start to make sense. They are incoherent, perhaps, in telling it, but they remember those words. And that is what we are left with today, to remember these words that have been given to us. That on the third day, God raised Jesus from the dead. And what that means is that we are to remember what happened to cause Him to be dead. There's no need for resurrection except He has been dead. And it is the forces of evil conspiring with violence and rejection against those who would stand up against the powers that be and their predilection for oppressing the poor and causing misery to the multitudes. That this Good Friday news is not the only news, nor is it the last word. We are to remember in our own day and generation the wars and the famine, the strife and the pain. We are to remember Good Friday, but we are to remember that spoken into that reality of our lives and that suffering is this good news that Jesus had said the powers of evil and of sin and of death and of violence and all of those things that cause us tremendous suffering do not have the last word. It is interesting that this year, our celebration of Easter comes right in the midst of our Jewish brothers and sisters' celebration of Passover. And I was reflecting on that as I recalled a book some years ago that I read by Yossi Klein Havlevi. Yossi Klein Havlevi was an Orthodox Jew in Brooklyn, New York. And he wrote a book called At the Entrance of the Garden of Eden, A Jew's Search for God with Christians and Muslims in the Land. Seems like an unlikely candidate for the kind of hope we're talking about on Easter Sunday. Oftentimes we see such great animus between the Jewish community and Christians at this time around Good Friday interpretations and how it's been used historically to victimize Jews. Emboldened by a move to Israel, Yossi began to take seriously the minorities that were there, the religious minorities, the Christians and the Muslims, and he sought out to dialogue and engage with them and try to figure things out. He was told by a sheikh, a Muslim sheikh, that the Jewish faith and Muslim faith are closer than he would even imagine, and began to talk back and forth. But Havli also learned, indeed, that there was something that they had to do about Jesus. And this is what he writes as he reflects on Jesus in his book. Jews need to make their peace with Jesus. We're still angry and afraid of Him. My father used to blame Jesus for all our troubles. But until we welcome Him back as a brother, we'll continue to treat Christianity as inauthentic. Jesus was the divine instrument for fulfilling the Jewish goal of spreading the word of God throughout the world. Thanks to Jesus, Yossi writes, I have a common spiritual language with half of humanity. And then he goes on to say near the end of his book that he longs for someone in Israel to rise up like Jesus, a Jewish visionary who would take on the religious bureaucrats, a fervent believer who would nevertheless preach love and forgiveness. There's something about this story that has the capacity to draw people together, previously divided. There's something about this good news, this resurrection news, that resonates with those of goodwill all around the world. Andy Glatt, a Zen Buddhist, tells his Christian brothers and sisters that with a story like Easter, a story like the resurrection, they should stop being so shy in preaching and telling it. That if you've got a story so good, let the world know. Because the world needs to hear it from a Zen Buddhist. There's something cosmic about the resurrection news. It is not just for one people's. It has implications for all of us because all of us die. All of us hurt. All of us suffer. All of us are either the recipients of or co-conspirators with or maybe both with suffering and wrong. All of us are in it together. Therefore, this news comes and penetrates to the core of the human reality and says, this is not the way you ought to live. This is not the dream of God for you. Open your hearts to something new, to the new way in which God is seeking to bring us. And the life, the death, the teaching, and the example of Jesus is that aperture through which we see this new way. The grammar, the defiant grammar of resurrection is not only but crucifixion and Good Friday, but Easter Sunday. Sin and suffering and pain, but joy and elation and celebration. It also helps us embody the reality of that in the meantime with the words anyway. There's a beautiful poem written by Kent Keith that was actually made famous by Mother Teresa. Has a framed copy, had a framed copy on her wall in her small residence in Calcutta, her small room. It read, "People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the best you've got anyway." You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and God. It has never been between you and them anyway. The defiant grammar of resurrection gathers steam and momentum. It is not only but this defiant conjunction that offers an alternative reality, good news to what we have lived and what we are living. We have come today because we know there's some good news out there for us, whether on a hospital bed having received a certain diagnosis, whether struggling with children or grandchildren addicted to drugs or alcohol or sex or gambling, whether it is those at the twilight of their lives wondering about their own mortality, whether it is there are exams that are piling up in one's head and worry and anxiety about that. Whatever is our reality, good news is welcomed. And it is not only but and anyway, but nevertheless. One of the interesting things about this story is that the women go back and they tell the apostles, they tell the men. And you know what the response is? They thought that what they had to say was an idle tale, foolishness, garbage, crap, unbelievable. And it says, and they did not believe them. Now here's something. When you hear somebody called or identify themselves as an unbeliever, it is not because they don't believe anything. It is that they believe something else more strongly. So when the women came and told the men that this Jesus whom they had been following, whom they loved, whom they served, whom they wanted to emulate, was not dead anymore. They're not used to that news. Dead people stay dead. They could not find the space in their hearts to believe something different because they believed more strongly the Good Friday narrator. That the forces colluded and killed him, and that's the end of the story. But the women come with a word of freshness and news and says, no, it is not true. And it says they did not believe them. The question to us, we have only the message, that message of hope. Some may say, well, I don't believe it. That's fine, I guess. We have to choose. But the question that I would want to ask then, if you don't believe it, what do you believe more strongly? What is it that you believe and you will stake your life on? That your life, this is all there is, you get one go around, so get and cram as much into it as you can, and then that's it? What story, what version of reality are you clinging to that prevents you from believing this good news, this unnatural, surprising intrusion into our settled notions? Maybe, just maybe, you and I might be like Peter, for having heard this and having joined the cohort of his apostles to say, we don't believe it. Something tugged at him strongly enough to cause him to go to the tomb to see for himself. Maybe, just maybe, the good news and the magnetic force of God's but anyway and nevertheless is enough to draw us out and cause us to search and to open ourselves to the encounter of the risen Christ this year. Just maybe, resurrection will have done its work. Amen.